Rich and the sound guy.
He's a singer.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. So I hope everyone's having a great day one at Build 2015. So my name is Charles Morris, and this is Sean Lindersay, and we're both PM leads on the Microsoft Edge team. It is so great to be able to say that out loud. So we're here today to give you an introduction to Microsoft Edge, the new browser, the new web platform, and the new foundation for web apps in Windows 10. So just a quick reminder to please fill out an evaluation after the session. Let us know what you think. So we have a lot to cover. I think it's safe to say that this is the biggest release for Microsoft and the web for quite a long time. And we have a lot to cover. Luckily, we have a lot of deep dive sessions to point you towards. But in the interest of saving time, I'm actually going to start right now by combining an agenda and architecture slide together. I don't think you've ever seen this done before. It's pretty amazing. So we're going to cover three main things. The first thing is Microsoft Edge, the browser. So Sean's going to take you through some of the design principles, take you through a tour of the features, as well as some of the technical underpinnings for the browser. I'm going to talk about Microsoft Edge HTML, which is a new rendering engine that powers Microsoft Edge. So I'll talk about the new focus for this engine, as well as a bunch of the new features that are coming to this new web platform. So Edge HTML, in addition to powering Microsoft Edge, is also powering the new web app platform for Windows 10. So this is really a new approach to web apps that's really going to be more friendly to web developers. So how many of you out there build websites either for work or on your spare time? So quite a few of you. How many of you use web-based technology in an app that's distributed through a store? So a slightly smaller crowd. How many of you use a browser to surf the internet? Okay, sweet. I need to get everyone to raise their hand at least once. So if you raise your hand, then there'll be something here for you. So before getting into all of that, I thought we should take a step back and really talk about the context of why this is such a big release and why Microsoft decided to build a new browser and a new platform at this time. But more importantly than, you know, why we thought it was the right time, I think it's important for us to think about why you should care for both for yourself as a developer as well as for your customers. And to understand this, we really need to take a journey back about a year ago when we started planning Windows 10. And when we started planning Windows 10, we really started by saying we need to build a stronger connection with our customers, web developers, browser enthusiasts. And so we need to start investing in building feedback channels and just participating in existing ones. And we actually started a year ago here at Build, where we launched status.modern.ie in beta. And what this is, a lot of you are probably familiar with it, but what it is a public roadmap. So it's our way of starting to tell people, here's what's in development, here's what's under consideration, so that everyone knows what we're working on. A month later, we launched it and open sourced the site. And since then, we've been really updating it every month so people know exactly what we're working on. But it wasn't enough to just tell you what we're working on. We also needed to let you tell us what you thought. And so we added the little vote link there, which linked off to our user voice site, where all of you, hopefully some of you, have exhausted all of your 25 votes here to tell us what you wanted to see next in the web platform. But of course, it's about a lot more than features, right? We want to hear what you had to say. So we started to get really active on Twitter, and we started holding these monthly Ask IE sessions. And for all of you speed readers, you're seeing that people really did ask us all sorts of things, and we did our best to actually answer as honestly as we could. And since 140 characters is sometimes a little constraining, we also did a Reddit AMA, which was a lot of fun. But beyond that, we also wanted to broaden the reach of feedback beyond people who are on Twitter or Reddit and get feedback from our broad base of customers. And the way we did this was by promoting the in-product feedback. So some of you noticed that the smiley face in Windows 10 moved up to the top-level UI. Here it is in IE because it launched there first, but of course it continues forward into Microsoft Edge. But what this allowed us to do is start to capture feedback really quickly from people, again, who don't go to these other places. Within just a couple of clicks, they can start to tell us when things are going wrong or not working the way they expect. And a little bit later on, we'll start to see how we're using some of this data. So when we took a step back and looked at all of that feedback that we were hearing, we start to see a few key trends. So to understand that, I thought we could look at kind of the history of the web to talk about these three main things that we started to see. The first one was that the technology underpinning the web has really evolved a ton. So early on, you can see the web's been around for over 25 years. As of last year, it celebrated its 25th anniversary. It may be older than some of you in the audience, I'm not sure. And IE has been around for most of that time. So we had kind of the early portion of the web where things were crazy. It was like the Wild West. Things were evolving really quickly, lots of new technologies, lots of new versions. But in addition to new standards like HTML4 and CSS2, because there were so many gaps, there was also a lot of proprietary technology. So you started to see things like ActiveX or VBScript, VML, vector markup language, starting to emerge that were not standards-based. And this, of course, culminated with IE6, which was kind of the dominant browser of the time. And at the time, people kind of thought that the web was maybe done. Like, this, we've checked that box. We know how to do the web. But it turns out that the web actually has a lot more impact than that. I think really what makes it unique is the enormous reach and diversity. So the way that the web gets to everyone, regardless of the OS device, is really by serving this enormous diversity of clients. And that really started to reemerge through kind of this transition phase of the web, where Firefox started to up the competition again. And with IE8, we really started to move back towards a standards-based approach. And then finally, we've moved, and over the last few years, you know, the pace of innovation has kind of picked back up with HTML5 and so forth. And so the main message we heard here from our customers was, okay, things have changed a lot. We really want to move forward and leave a lot of these IE proprietary technologies behind. And yet we also had these customers on the other end of the spectrum that said, hey, I have a site that needs ActiveX or needs VBScript. I just need those to continue working. In fact, whenever you upgrade, it would be really great if you stopped breaking that. And so we had kind of this tension happening that we needed to deal with. So that's the first thing we heard. The second thing we heard was, you know, there's these really strong competitors emerging. So Firefox, as I mentioned earlier, Safari, especially on mobile, and then more recently Chrome on the PC as well as mobile. And by providing a powerful platform, great market share, and great user experiences, these have started to really, in some cases, become quite dominant. And so what we started hearing from developers especially was, hey, we've seen this story before. We need to make sure, we really need Microsoft competitive and making sure that the web continues to thrive on the basis of having multiple independent implementations, kind of this balance that's driving the web forward. So that was the second thing. The third thing we heard was apps. So all of you probably deal with this. It's part of why you're here. And so there was this emergence of the App Store. And all of you have probably seen surveys where you're seeing people spend less time in browsers and more time in apps. And yet, for a lot of developers, especially those that were used to the web, there was some conflict there. It's like, okay, yeah, I want to go where my users are going, and I want to provide them with richer experiences. And yet, I don't want to lose what's great about the web. I love being able to deploy and push out updates like that. I love the cross-platform nature of the web so that I don't have to rebuild things over and over again. And so this was the third thing that we heard and really caused us to rethink how we bring web apps into Windows 10. So taken all together, this is really what caused us to realize that we needed to do more than just produce the next version of the browser. We needed a more fundamental shift in the way we do things, and this is what led to not just a new browser with a fresh coat of paint, not just swapping out the engine, not just a new web app platform, but really all three of those things. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Sean.
Thanks. So along with the changes in the web and the web technology, web standards, the actual world around which the browser was built has also been changing over the last 20 years. And we have been improving the browser over time, but there are some very fundamental ways that things have changed, and particularly with Windows 10, some of those have really taken a step function in complexity. For example, we've moved from a single form factor, 995, PC, mouse, keyboard, to multiple form factors, mobile and PC. And with Windows 10, we're actually even going even further with large screen, Surface Hub, Xbox is used with controller, HoloLens. You saw Spartan in the demo this morning is stuck up against a wall, and you interact with it with your eye tracking and your finger. And then small devices, IoT devices, wearables, things like that. And we had to think about, do we have a browser platform, the way that we're building a browser, the way that we're structuring the app, that can actually allow us to scale across all of these different devices? They're also changing expectations from users. For example, there's this idea of a mobility of experience, which is, instead of I'm just having a single device, I actually have multiple devices, and I have multiple devices at the same time, and I want to be able to move that experience from one to the other. I want to be able to have similar experiences on them. I want to use two at the same time. There's this expectation that in addition to having my experience on each device, I'm actually having my experience on multiple devices. There's this expectation that I'm always online, or at least I have connectivity to some form of network, whether it's a cellular network or Wi-Fi, pretty much at all times across some kind of across various devices. And that expectation has sort of been going up and up and up and up over time. In 1995, when we launched, 45 million people on the planet had access to the internet. Just last year, we just crossed 3 billion people with access to the internet. And so there's this huge sort of movement of people, like they have this expectation of being online and having the internet be a part of their experience wherever they are. And the third sort of thing that people are expecting is they're expecting their devices to be smarter, to be more personal, in some cases to have more personality, to be kind of more interesting, more engaged, to understand them, and to sort of, magically, through the power of the cloud in most cases, sort of figure out what it is they need and make their lives a little bit easier. So people are starting to have that expectation about the products that they use, that they're smart and they're personal. And the environment around which the browser is being built has also been changing radically. There's all these different kinds of input, natural user input, speech, touch, eye tracking, gestures, things like that. And thinking about how does the browser adapt into these different inputs is very important for us. Power consumption actually turns out to be a really important thing. As devices get smaller, as batteries get smaller, as people are more mobile, the amount of power that your product uses, that the browser on the product uses as a very important application on the device uses, is another factor that we have to sort of think about up front. And these sort of questions we ask ourselves, did we have the right browser platform for these changing environments? And finally, and probably not at all least, the security environment and the privacy environment has changed radically. I mean, it's ramped up significantly. I'm sure you don't spend more than a few days on the internet without finding out about some new hack or some amount of data that was lost or the latest zero day on a browser. So, this is the environment in which we live, that the products that we build are being attacked on a regular basis. And so when we approached the browser, when we looked at what the products we had, we sort of said, we need to go beyond sort of the coat of paint and beyond simply changing the engine. We actually need to rethink how we're building the browser, how we're shipping it, how we engineer it, and how we actually approach sort of the problems that we think the browser needs to solve for the user. So we had a couple basic design tenets as we approached it. The first one, the first and most important one, is be an amazing browser. We have to be secure, we have to be reliable, we have to respect users' privacy, we have to have tabs, we have to have printing and sharing and all these sort of basic things that people expect out of a browser. So we have to be amazing at that. Anything else that we do on top of that or beside that without actually landing that idea of having an amazing browser, it sort of goes for naught if people just can't do what they need to do. And that, of course, means that the web just works for them as well, as Charles talked about with respect to the platform. The second thing that we said is we were going to be bold and we're going to be forward-looking. And that sort of meant, as we'll talk about a little later, some of the things that we took for granted as we've been developing sort of in an Explorer over the years and iterating on an Explorer. Some of those things we took for granted, like that we had to maintain support for certain types of extensibility, for example, we were going to take that step function away because the environment in which we were operating meant that those things were keeping us from building the browser that was as secure as we needed it to be, as fast as we needed it to be, and as reliable as we needed it to be. And the third thing, and this is sort of aligns with the Windows 10 overall Windows as a service, is we decided we were going to ship fast, try new things, and learn and always get better. So we started last year with shipping developer previews as part of under IE, getting those features out there, trying out to see if this Twitter thing worked and if we were getting the right kind of feedback. Actually, a lot of things that we hadn't done in the past because we thought that the interaction might not work or we'd get too much feedback of people just telling us their product sucks, something like that. So we still get that feedback. But actually, as it turns out, a ton of people are out there really passionate, they want the product to be better, and they give us really amazing, honest feedback. And so these are the kinds of things, these are the sort of the tenets that we held close as we approached the product that we're building. These are things that we're going to keep with us as we develop the product. They'll be the products we ship this summer with Windows 10, and then we'll improve the product over time with these sort of principles in mind. So coming back to what we're actually shipping this summer, we decided to focus on three sort of core areas in the product. Aside from sort of core redesign of the product and the way we were engineering, there are three areas we decided we want to try to put a stake in the ground and do something different and differentiating with. So the first is around Cortana, digital assistant that's built into Windows 10, comes from Windows Phone, and we decided to really think about how we could improve browsing with this idea that I have a personal assistant that could sort of help me accomplish the tasks that I'm doing on the web. The second is around reading. Now, reading is one of the most common activities that we're doing on the web, probably the single, we're all reading lots and lots of things. But people are reading long form, they're reading short form. They're doing a lot of consumption of content on the web. And so we decided we're going to try to make that better. And so we have a couple features that we've done this release, and we're going to do more and more over time to really try to nail that core scenario of people reading on the web. And the third thing is around note-taking. So we've seen this idea of people annotating, meme creation, sharing, this idea of doing research on the web. This is something we've seen over and over again as a core pattern of what people are doing on the web. As they've integrated the web into their lives, and it sort of becomes just a part of what they do. And we decided we're going to try to do some things in that space to really make that easier. You'll see some of this, the work that we've done in our first release this summer, and we'll do more and more of that over time. So let me do a quick demo of what we've done. Okay, so here we are, and I'm going to start up, I almost said Project Spartan. I start up Microsoft Edge. I will say that at least 10 times correctly. It has been a long time of not saying Microsoft Edge. So, and to start with, this is the new tab page that we sort of announced this morning. And it actually, from this, you can sort of see the overall, how we've designed the browser. The browser is designed to sort of focus you on the tasks that matter. The UI is streamlined. We've minimized the lines that are in the user experience. We've moved things to where they sort of naturally should be. Tabs above the address bar is a thing that we wanted to do for a while, sort of reduce the amount of space used up by the browser Chrome. So you put your focus on the content. The new tab page explicitly is something we actually spent quite a bit of time iterating on, because the new tab page and sort of the home page are an interesting sort of point in how people are used when they use the browser. You start a new tab because you have something in mind or you want to explore something. We want to really nail those core tasks that people want to accomplish. They want to go to a particular site, they want to do a search, or they want to go to some of the sites that they've been to in the past. And we know from research that people tend to go to between 6 and 12 sites over and over and over again. And so we want to really optimize around making sure that we would bring those sites to you so that, over time, this top site list will kind of optimize itself to you and the sites that you go to so that you just click on new tab, go to the site that you wanted to go to. And below that, we wanted to really create this personalized experience where we could showcase some apps that you might be interested in, some content that you're interested in. If you've told Cortana the sports teams that you're interested in, then the content will show up here and adapt to that. The sports teams, the stocks, the types of news, the different topics that are interested to you. So all of these things are, the content below here is highly personalized to you and the type of information that you consider valuable. And this entire surface is actually designed as a surface that we can iterate and experiment on. So we have the ability over time to see if things are working, if people are accomplishing the tasks that they need to. We can flight different designs and see if it's really meeting the goals that we had, that people are able to get to the tasks they want to accomplish or discover interesting things to them. So as I mentioned, Cortana is an important part of the experience that we've built. And when we thought about Cortana, we thought about the different ways that she could sort of help in the sort of core experiences of the browser. So one of the most fundamental experiences of the browser is typing the address bar or doing a search. And we, you know, we've sort of demoed this one before. Yeah, that's not too bad. As you're typing the address bar, the idea is Cortana is sort of watching what you're doing. You have this personal assistant that's kind of watching what you're typing and using that context to figure out what it is you might be trying to get to and then bring that to you immediately so that you don't need to go somewhere else. So we've shown this weather and stock stuff, and actually just a couple days ago we rolled out a few more Cortana-enhanced things, including what I have to say is by far my favorite. I missed a space there. Yeah, so this is very, very important. I have my ability to tell how Brad Pitt is at the tips of my fingers. And for those of you who know me, that's really, very important. By the way, Brad Pitt is as old, you guys have seen this on there, he's old as Wilford Brimley was in the movie Cocoon. It's kind of a scary, scary thought. I can tell you about Tom Cruise as well, if that's anybody, no? Do you already know that? You guys already know how Tom Cruise is. Okay, so I don't need to tell you that. Plenty of other questions you can type in. These are common things that people search for. When is Thanksgiving? When does this flight land? We can have flight status in here, movie show times, things like that. We can't just bring these things to you so that you have access to them. And so Cortana's able to figure out and infer what you need and kind of bring those things to you. The second area we invested in is sort of trying to figure out how she can help you complete tasks. So here I'm going to go to this restaurant, and you see in the top corner, Cortana's kind of popped out, and she says, you know, I have hours and directions and menu information for you. And it turns out this is actually a very popular feature, because people, you know, this is, I'm sure, a great restaurant website, you know, it's perfectly designed. But a lot of restaurant websites, not this one, because we got permission to use this site. A lot of restaurant websites are actually quite difficult to navigate. And so if you click on this up here, that she has this information, we actually can package all the information about the site. And so she can tell you, you know, the phone number, some Yelp reviews. if it was within 20 miles of you or so, it would actually map the directions from that from where you are to that location, tell you how far away it is, whether it's open right now, help you book it on OpenTable, things like that. And so this experience is something that we are expanding over time. We have, I think, about 40,000 restaurants in right now. We're going to expand over the next few months to the majority of restaurants in the United States and then over time to a number of restaurants around the world. And then we will also be adding different scenarios, and there's a few new scenarios that we'll talk about towards the end that we're kind of bringing in. This idea that, you know, based on the context of what I'm doing in the browsing, my personal assistant can sort of help me find what I'm looking for. And the final thing that we sort of have is, you know, this very simple idea that, well, I can always ask Cortana what about something. So I click on South Lake Union here. I don't know where it is. It gives me a little map. And we have like 20 or 30 different entities that we support here, whether it's, if it's a food that is used in commonly used for eating, we'll have a recipe for it. We'll have some nutrition information. If it's a place, we'll have a map. If it's a person that's in a movie, say Brad Pitt, it'll tell you what movies he's in. Very important. I look that up all the time. So this is the idea that we had, is this idea is I have this personal assistant, and she's available to help me find out all of my Brad Pitt-related information at all times. Okay, the second thing that we kind of worked on, as I said, is reading. So we started by this idea of a reading list. So reading is an interesting scenario, and it sort of derives from, reading list is interesting because it derives from favorites. A lot of people use favorites to just keep track of things that they want to read later. We had this idea that we would come up with a reading list. So you could add things explicit to your reading list. You get a more beautiful view of them. It's organized in reverse order by the things you put in. When you click on them, it can take you to the site. And you know, you can easily remove it and say that I'm done with this reading this article. So it's really optimized around this idea. I want to put something away and read it at a later time. And when you come to the article, the other thing that we did was work on this distraction-free reading view, which is where we take the content that's on the page, we run a set of heuristics, pull out the content, the core images, and sort of reconstruct the page into something that's far more readable and far more interesting to you instead of the distractions that might be on the page. So this is sort of the first couple of things that we've done around reading. We'd love your feedback on them, and then we'll work on more in the future. So the third thing we did is around annotation. So I'm just going to show you very quickly. And if I tap on the annotation button, I can sort of say, right, so this is something I can do. I can write it directly on the page, and then I can sort of clip this. And I don't know, Brad Pitt's swimming over on the side there. Yeah, thanks for letting me know. reminding me of Brad. He's never far from my mind. didn't expect this to you. So I can clip this and I can share it with my wife. I do have a wife. She will never see this. So I can clip this and I can share this image and I can make annotations. You know, it's very, you know, we've seen this, lots of people use this scenario in different ways. They see something on Amazon, they want to annotate it and send it to somebody. And it's not just a pen, you can use your finger also. If you have a touch screen, you can do a text annotation as well. you can share this as well. So I'm going to just quit out of that and hope that it was deleted. Okay, so that's sort of the core features: Cortana, reading, and annotation. And these are sort of three areas that we've tried to create some interesting and differentiating scenarios around. And really, try the product and let us know what you think. I think we're going to switch back to slides. in addition to that, we really want to talk about what Microsoft Edge is as an app. It's built for Windows 10, and we'll talk about why that's important and why that's interesting. It's built on the universal Windows platform, which allows us to actually work across all of these devices over time. We just have to design different UI, because that is part of what you want to do, is make sure that the core of the app goes across different devices, but you create a user experience that's tailored for each device. And it's updated frequently along with Windows 10. It's also ready for the future. And in that sense, as I mentioned briefly before, it does also mean that we've left behind some of the technologies that kind of have been part of the IE history up till this point. ActiveX controls aren't supported. We do support Flash and PDF natively as part of Project Spartan. But ActiveX is not supported. Toolbars, BHOs, the variety of technologies like that, which we no longer support, VBScript, aren't supported anymore. It's a longish list. You must not work in IT. So for our friends in IT who do have a lot of line of business applications that do require these technologies, IE11, mostly untouched, we've done, of course, security work on it, is part of the product. And you as an IT administrator will be able to deploy a customized list so that you can actually deploy IE11 as the default if that works for your environment, because you have that many systems that require it, or you can actually sort of periodically, launch over to Internet Explorer. For example, we at work, we still have an expense app that requires some ActiveX controls, and so whenever I go to the expense app, it pops out an IE, I do the expenses, and I close it, and I go back into Microsoft Edge. And also, we've taken advantage of a lot of the security features. It's 64-bit by default, which is something we've actually been trying to do for a very long time, and actually been held back because most extensibility has been 32-bit up to this point. And we use app containers, which is a sandboxing technology as part of Windows 10. So these are some of the things that we have sort of built on and sort of taken for granted for Windows 10. Now, one of the things you might be sort of wondering is, well, Windows 10, and what about all these, down-level platforms? So as you heard this morning, one of our goals is to make sure that Windows 10 is on as many devices as possible. Over the past couple years, we've upgraded 650 million Windows 7 PCs to SP1 to get them ready for that upgrade to Windows 10. We've upgraded 200 million plus Windows 8X PCs to the latest update of Windows 8.1 to get them ready for that Windows 10 upgrade. We have all the Windows Phone devices, we have Xbox devices, and we have new PCs that will be coming out over the next year that are running Windows 10. So this number sounds a little large, But there's a real active plan in place to try to get as many existing users onto Windows 10 and to and all the different devices, the different pieces on Windows 10. So the base on which Microsoft Edge will be running will actually be huge in a very short amount of time. And of course, it's the default browser on the desktop. It's the browser on the phone as well, and it's available on the other devices that we've talked about. So that's a little bit about the app. Hand over to talk a little bit about Edge HTML. Do you have any pictures of?
So, yeah, I mean, I'll start out again by apologizing in advance. There's going to be a sharp decrease in Brad Pitt-related content for the next little while. Sorry. That's good for some people, apparently. So I'm going to talk about Microsoft Edge HTML, which is the new rendering engine that powers Microsoft Edge. So I talked a little bit earlier about some of the broad trends that we were seeing across the web, what we were hearing from our customers. And what we ended up doing last May, actually, was we formed our platform priorities. And we really rallied around this single statement that we published on our blog last May. And the statement was really simple. The web should just work for everyone, users, developers, and businesses. And this was a reflection of what we were hearing and seeing from people, was that this kind of fundamental promise of the web wasn't actually working as promised. And so let me show you a quick example of what we were seeing. So in general, you know, this is the web that we're used to, right? You've got a site, it works great, works the same across a bunch of different browsers. And this is the web that, this is what the web promises. So we're good, right? Well, actually, it turns out that we weren't seeing that all over the place. On an increasing number of sites, we started to see situations more like this, especially where the sites were adopting more modern technologies, things that were perhaps only available in one browser. So this was very prevalent on the mobile web. And so you had a certain browser that was, you know, through no fault of its own, actually racing ahead, providing new capabilities to developers, providing the market share. And developers were getting excited and building great things for it. And so this was kind of, you know, harkening back to the IE6 days. And although it pushes the web forward, it also takes away from some of that reach and diversity that I talked about earlier that's really the fundamental value of the web. And so we really wanted to bring that tenet of the web just works back to the modern web. And so we were faced with kind of this question of how do we start to push forward and fix a lot of these interoperability issues that we were seeing that were causing these things on the modern web, as well as continuing to make our customers happy that had a lot of dependencies on IE proprietary technology and just wanted those sites written in the year 2000 or so to just keep on working. And that's what led us to not just a break from the past, but a fork from the past. So we actually forked the IE engine, MSHTML, and created a new engine that we're calling Edge HTML. And the reason we did that was to really free ourselves from the compatibility burden. So we can now leave that engine in place for compatibility, and we now had this new engine that could be 100% focused on interoperability. So let's take a look at how that works. So this was kind of the old story. In IE, we had the one engine. And we said, hey, we're going to deliver everything in this one place. We're going to deliver the latest HTML5 standard. And by the way, that site that you wrote that requires VBScript and ActiveX and all that other stuff is going to continue to work. And part of the way we did that was by implementing what we call document modes. So these have been out for many years, and I still run across people who have been developing for IE and still don't quite understand them. And it turned out they were pretty confusing because you had one browser that could now behave in a bunch of different ways depending on what mode it was in. And again, we tried to say, hey, use this browser whether you're browsing the latest HTML5 site or on your intranet or enterprise mode site. So now with forking the engine, what we were able to do is take that engine and give it a really clear purpose. So now in Windows 10, MSHTML has a very clear purpose. Its purpose is to be backwards compatible. In fact, since we're not really touching it other than security fixes, as Sean mentioned, we can now tell our customers with much higher degree of confidence that this thing is going to continue to work as it did before. So it continues to support the same technologies as it always does. always did, but it now has a very focused purpose for mostly for enterprise and intranet sites, as well as certain regions around the world like Korea that have a big dependency on ActiveX. And it allows us to introduce this new browser, new rendering engine, and say, for the vast majority of users that don't have a dependency on all of these technologies, then here's the browser, and we expect, like I said, the vast majority of Windows 10 users to be on Microsoft Edge. So once we made that split, it really freed us up to start piling a bunch of interoperability improvements, ripping out all of that IE-specific stuff and fixing a lot of the differences or gaps between Microsoft Edge and other modern browsers. In fact, in Microsoft Edge, there are over 4,200 interoperability improvements on top of IE11. And as you can see, they're still trickling in as we speak. There we go. There's the animation I was waiting for. This is actually hooked up directly into our source code system. And no. So how do we know that this is actually working? So I took you through this scenario before. Different experience across different devices. Now with Edge, you actually see the same experience. This is a combination of a new user agent string, of course, but also interoperability improvements so that we behave the same. There was no changes required from the website in this case. But of course, we can't just say, oh, here's one or two or three or 10 or 100 sites that are now better. We need to look broader than that. The web is 40-some billion websites. And so this is where we can really leverage the telemetry that I talked about earlier. So I walked you through the smiley face and how it's really important for us to be able to enable people to give us feedback within just a couple of clicks. So here's an example of how we're using that feedback. So this is telemetry that's showing us how the number of reports that we get between the old engine and the new engine. So there was a period of time over the last few months where they were both out there, and actually if you installed Windows 10, you didn't know what engine you were going to get. We actually had basically A/B testing happening, and you could go in and override it if you wanted to, but for the vast majority of our users, they didn't know necessarily that they were getting a new engine. And what that allowed us to do was compare the amount of feedback we were getting between each and tell us if we were doing better than the old engine. And so what you see here towards the left is that when we first released the new engine, this is back in November, we were actually doing worse. And this was expected because we changed the user agent string. We got rid of all the IE-specific tokens. And we said, no, we're really serious about rendering the same content as other browsers. And so we were getting content that had no IE-specific workarounds or anything. And things were breaking because we didn't have all the interoperability fixes in yet. And yet, as you move towards the right, you can see that as we release new builds, things start to get better and better. And crossing over that dotted line was the point where we, a few weeks ago, started to see more positive feedback, or I guess we could say less negative feedback for the new browser than we did for the old one. And of course, we're just going to continue checking in those interoperability improvements. So this is just going to continue going up. So I've talked a bunch about interoperability and making the web just work, but of course we also want to push the leading edge of the web, pun sort of intended, I guess, leading edge of the web forward. So we implemented a whole bunch of new features. So this is a list directly off status.modern.ie. You can always get the latest list here of 45 or so. So this 45 or so standards that are coming in development or in preview today in Microsoft Edge. So that's all the time I have to cover right now on the platform. There's a lot more detail to come. I actually feel kind of bad for not showing you any code in a platform session, but thankfully there's a lot coming in these sessions. So actually it's going to start tomorrow in the keynote when David Treadwell and Kevin Gallo are going to give a demo of a new site, Flight Arcade, that combines a bunch of these new technologies together. You'll also see some great performance improvements that I had to try really hard not to tell you about today so that you can be surprised tomorrow, as well as more about hosted web apps, which we'll talk about in a second. Next up, you've got making your site rock with F12. This actually happened a couple of hours ago, so hopefully you caught it. If not, then you can see Andy's talk online. So the F12 tools, if you're familiar with them, with IE, those are coming over to Microsoft Edge. And a new and improved version of F12 will be the developer tooling for Microsoft Edge. Then we've got, on Friday, we've got a couple of sessions. Both of them will be super technical. First, the rendering engine deep dive with David and David. And, you know, lots of code, lots of demos, great session. And then finally, Brian will be talking about building fast and scalable apps with JavaScript. So on the previous slide, you probably noticed that there's a whole lot of ECMAScript 6 features on the slide. And so I'm really happy that Microsoft Edge actually currently has the leading implementation of the next generation of JavaScript, ES6, as measured by a third-party site. And so if you're interested in learning more about that, definitely check out Brian's talk. It's super technical. So if you're a JavaScript coder and you want to geek out, definitely don't miss that. All right, so now we've got to move on to the third aspect, which is web apps, the new web app platform for Windows 10. So as I mentioned earlier, web apps, apps in general, are a big trend. And we've really, we've had a number of ways to include the web in apps over the past few releases. So we've had things like hybrid apps, web view controls, as well as packaged apps where you could use HTML and write a bunch of code on the client instead of using XAML, let's say, in C#. But we felt like we really needed a new approach. And the reason for this is really comes down to what Terry talked about this morning in the keynote. And that's really about providing a more natural bridge from the way all of these different platforms work into the universal Windows platform. So really providing a way for people to bring their apps to Windows in a more natural way. So today I'm going to give you a few more details about what that means for the web. And so what we're enabling that's new is what we call hosted web apps. So I want to talk just a little bit about how this is different from the other web app approaches we've delivered in the past. So the first is that your website is really the foundation for your store app. And what this means is that it's literally a URL that you put into a manifest, and that gets published to the store. You don't have to download your site and package it up locally. You don't even have to put a web view control into your app. This is not just about just a website wrapper. So what really makes it not just a website wrapper is that you can augment the experience. So I said your site is the foundation. And the reason it's just the foundation is that you can now augment your site's experience using the Universal Windows API. So if there's anything that you need in the Windows, that's in the Windows API, so let's say access to a device that's not part of the standards-based web platform, you can now do that through JavaScript and the Windows Universal Windows API. And the best part of this is that there's no change to your web workflow. So again, you might be thinking, we've done this in the past. You know, I have a web control, and I know how to call from that out into the local package code in my app. That is not what hosted web apps is all about. It's really about having no change to your web workflow. That means the JavaScript code that's calling the Universal Windows APIs is actually living on your server. And so when you need to deploy an update to that code, you just do the same workflow that you always do, hit deploy, and all of your users are immediately updated. So here's how it could look in practice. So here's an example of a simple website, sample website that we've created. So it's a responsive website, travel app. And it's functional as a website. You can do the basic scenarios here. However, we'd like to light it up. We'd like to augment it when it's installed as a hosted web app on Windows 10. And so what we can do is just feature detect Windows. So in the same way that on the web, you feature detect any HTML5 feature in JavaScript, let's say, because you're not sure if the browser that is hitting you is going to support it, you feature detect Windows. Again, this code is living on your server. And so we just say, if Windows, then we can now call a Windows-specific API. And once, if your site is running in a Windows app context, then all of a sudden your travel app can get augmented and start and put a calendar appointment directly into the user's calendar. So you can imagine if it's running as a website, then you can't, you just don't do this, or you make them download an ICS file or something like that. So this is a great example of augmenting the experience, making sure they get a better, more native feeling experience when your site is installed as an app. So again, the great thing about this is that you can deploy this code, you can update this code immediately without having to go through any kind of App Store approval process. So in addition to hosted web apps, we're also improving other types of web apps. So again, we know people use more of the hybrid model where they've got a web view control. So there's a much improved way to call between the code in your control as well as code in your app using add web allowed objects. So no more invoke script async and all of that, as well as some new APIs. And packaged web apps are getting a lot better. One of the biggest hurdles that we heard about that was the security restrictions. So that's going to get a lot better using the content security policy or CSP standard, which will allow you to basically whitelist the domains that you want your app to be able to communicate with. So again, a lot more there. I think you get the message. If you want to learn more about web apps, then please check out Jeff and Carol's session tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. where they'll go into way more detail and have a lot of demos and code. All right, back to Sean.
Thanks. Sorry. So what we talked about, as I mentioned earlier, this is, you know, we're really thinking about Microsoft Edge as something that we're evolving over time. And so what we've shown you and talked about is stuff we're doing for our RTM release this summer. But we actually, you know, we wanted to give you a sort of a sneak peek to things that are coming after that, to kind of get you an idea of what we're focused on. So the first, actually, most important thing you should do is actually spend some time on status.modern.ie, or its new URL that will be coming, you can redirect from there. That will get really this idea of what standards are coming. And there's some really interesting standards like Object RTC, which is the next step of WebRTC, allowing peer-to-peer communication between browsers, Skype scenarios, for example. And pointer lock, which is a really interesting one for gaming, where you can lock the mouse pointer to the browser so that people can do first-person shooters, for example. So these are a couple of the standards that are coming after RTM, and you sort of keep track of how those are coming, and we'll have previews that you can sort of see how this is working after RTM. The other thing that I'll just do a quick demo of, and then we'll take some questions, is extensions. Now, this morning you saw Joe talk about extensions. Now, one thing I didn't make clear is these extensions, the work that you saw today is early code, and it will actually not be ready for RTM. So for RTM, we're not going to have this extensibility support, but it will come after RTM, and we'll have previews for people to start working with after RTM and to get a sense of what we're building. But to try to give you a sense of that, you know, she showed you a couple demos. One is the Reddit example, where we basically took an existing extension built by the Reddit Enhancement Suite folks as an open source team. It's a group of engineers who just wanted to add some features to the Reddit site. And then Reddit, the CEO of Reddit at one point said it was the, you know, I love you guys. Like, so it's actually a pretty interesting symbiotic relationship. We went and talked to these guys, and we got their code, and we basically took that, and we were able to bring it over to Microsoft Edge almost unchanged, so that it basically has all of the core functionality. And if you're a Reddit user, a lot of this functionality is going to be very familiar to you, including things like the image preview, inline preview, instead of you having to click through to the site. And there are tons of other features that Reddit Enhancement Suite adds, and all those features were actually brought on online without any changes, any material changes from the original developer. And similarly with the Pinterest example that we showed, no, this is the Pinterest extension. And we actually, again, worked with the Pinterest, and we got their code, and we were able to bring it up with a very few changes to the extension itself. So we're actually trying to support these HTML5 JavaScript extensions that are sort of the standard on the web today, and make it really, really easy, if you have an extension today, to bring it over to Project Spartan. One extension he didn't show was some work that we actually did with our Bing Translate team, where they wrote an extension for us that also happens to work in other browsers. And this looks like an interesting site. And you see in the top in the address bar, they put a little icon that says I can kind of translate this site as well. But you know, we also have this reading view feature. And so with a little bit of extra work, they said, well, let's take advantage of the fact that there's a reading view feature as well. So that when I click reading view, actually will actually switch into reading view and translate it automatically at the same time. So I get this distraction-free and actually readable for me, since I don't speak Spanish, version of this site. And so, you know, that's kind of what happened there, is it detected you when in reading view and automatically translated that. And that was something, the kind of thing we'd like to actually do with extensions as we bring them online, is have them do unique stuff with the features that we have in the browser. And so we're going to make those things available for extension developers. And we have a few more. We have a great extension from the Skype team to, you know, enhance the phone numbers on the page. And then one of a lot of people's favorites, turn off the lights, which you go to a video site, it disables, makes everything dim except the video. We actually took, you know, we found it very easy to take extensions from different developers and kind of stand them up in the browser. So this is early work, and it will be coming after RTM. We'll have a lot more information on that on the blogs for people to look into. But just, you know, kind of give people a line of sight into where we're coming at. Any work that sort of exists today with other browsers, we'll be able to bring that work over, and actually then you'll be able to light it up on Spartan with the new features. The other thing that you'll see is we're going to be bringing in more Cortana features. You know, a few months ago, we had the weather and stock scenario. We brought online the very important Brad Pitt age scenario. And, you know, we have reference scenarios, movies, flight times. We have tech support, which is a very common thing that people search. It's like, you know, this thing crashed. So we'll actually have some scenarios where Cortana can help with getting you on the right track with tech support. So all these things will be coming online between now and RTM and then over time after that. And we have also some interesting scenarios, like a shopping scenario that we're bringing online around. You go to a shopping site and we offer some coupons that might be available. And all these things, the way we've designed the products, as I mentioned very early on, with people expect the product to be smarter and more personal. The way we've designed it is a lot of these features can be lit up purely with server-side changes so that we can adapt to the different kinds of scenarios that people use, and we can adapt to you know, what's being successful, what's not being successful, and sort of make a better browser over time. So the more people use it, the more we can, you know, figure out what people need. So just switching back. And then.
All right. So, you know, as I started out by saying, we started about a year ago with this fundamental notion that we need to have a closer connection with developers and enthusiasts, basically all of you. And that's not something that's going to stop. And so I want to just leave with this closing thought of, please, you know, we treat Microsoft Edge and the platform and the web app platform as kind of this community thing. And we want to make sure that we're building what you want as a user, as a developer. And so there's a bunch of resources here, User Voice, the status site that we talked about. A lot of these URLs are going to change in the very near future because of the rebrand. But as Sean said, don't worry, they will continue to, or they will redirect to the new homes. We're also very active on Twitter, at IEDevChat, which is also going to change, to at MSEdgeDev at any time now, as well as Stack Overflow. And we're putting more and more of our samples and things on GitHub. The last thing I want to leave you with is if you want to know even more. So I pointed at you at a bunch of sessions here to learn more. But next week, we're actually having a full two-day event in Mountain View, just down the highway, that we're calling the Microsoft Edge Web Summit. So this is going to be a full two-day event all about Microsoft Edge, really focused at developers. So for today, it's very close to sold out. We actually decided to open up registration again today just for Build to make sure that people who wanted to come can make it in. If you're in town or can stick around a little bit longer, definitely go to aka.ms/msedgesummit, and you can register for free. So with that, thank you very much. Once again, please fill in an evaluation, and I think we've got a few minutes for questions.
We're also the last session, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so we can probably go a little.
Yeah, we can stay for hours for questions. So if you've got a question, please step up to one of the mics and so everyone can hear. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Oh, I understand. All right.
All right, looks like we've got a question over here.
So with the With taking my website and making it into a web app, as you mentioned, and you mentioned how your URL is the basis and it goes into the store.
Yep.
Does it have to go into the store, or can I deploy that within the enterprise without having to go through the store and still get all those benefits?
Within the enterprise, you can deploy it, because I believe we've got an enterprise store story.
Oh, okay.
And so you can basically have a private store.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, but for broad consumers, it does have to go through the store.
Okay, cool, thank you.
Thanks.
So for the markup, where you're in the browser and you're making your annotations, et cetera, where's all that stored? Is that pushed up into your cloud, or how do we share that across devices, et cetera?
So right now, what happens is basically stored locally, and then you can share it as a package. We render it out as a MSHTML file with all the content in it. It's interactable, and you can share that file or put it on your cloud. Over time, we'd like to have more seamless ways, put it on the cloud automatically for you, things like that. But it's a package that you can just share, and then the person who gets it as you saw it. It's sort of frozen in time, but with your annotations and your comments sort of available on it, on the image.
Thanks, and just obviously it would be great if that was just kind of universal across. So if I brought up the web page on my desktop, I would see my annotations that I made the previous night. So,
great feedback. Thank you.
Hi. Maybe you've already mentioned this and I missed it, but what is your release strategy after the big launch this summer? Is it rolling releases every 30 days? Are you locked to the next version of Windows? Is it whenever you feel like it?
It's sort of, so being locked to the next version of Windows and rolling releases are actually now the same thing. That's one of the big changes that sort of happened with Windows 10, is that Windows 10 itself will actually be doing rolling releases, and consumers will be sort of brought along. And this is one of the big sort of the pushes of Windows 10, the app platform broadly, is that the entire app platform of Windows 10 is going to be kept evergreen across the entire consumer base. Microsoft Edge with the platform will move along with that. So we actually can update on a regular cadence. We haven't quite worked out the exact, like, is it going to be 45 days or 90 days or 73 days or anything like that. We haven't quite worked out the exact cadence. But we have the technical ability to sort of update and sort of bring the entire user base along with us at a rapid pace. So rolling updates, evergreen browser, that is the plan that we have. Yeah.
One thing I'll add real quick is that the Insider program, as we've announced, is going to continue after RTM. And the cadence there has varied a little bit, but lately we've really aimed for twice a month. So if you want really the latest and greatest, that's the way to get the latest and greatest, up to twice a month, so really 2 weeks basis. In terms of how often we want to push those bits out to kind of the rest of our customers, we're still figuring that out, as Sean said. Thanks.
Oh, there was somebody there.
There's a free mic over there.
Will the web apps be available on all of the platforms that Windows 10 supports, like including Xbox and HoloLens?
Yes, absolutely, yep. So they're going to go into the Universal Store. So the question was, will the web apps be available on all Windows 10 platforms? And the answer is yes. So especially if you have a great responsive web experience that scales across those different form factors, then you've basically got a great head start on an app across all those devices.
So the only trade-offs with that compared to like a native universal app might be some of the specific functionality like live tiles and other things like that, right?
Yeah, but actually with access to the Universal Windows API, you can actually light up a lot of that functionality now from your web app.
Okay.
Do you want to bounce across there?
Yeah, so I have two questions. First one, I know I'm it's a longer line, but I apologize. First one, with the IT being able to roll out IE and setting that as a mandate, is there any statement about being able to end a life in IE and when that'll be?
We haven't made any statements there. I mean, our guidance and we're working with customers definitely to help them migrate off of those technologies, but we haven't set a marker in the future. That's definitely the direction we're moving, but we want to provide a transition time to our customers to get off a lot of these old technologies. We don't know exactly how long that's going to take at this point.
Sure. So second question about the web apps is, what about certification? Because if they're going into the store, is there any sort of certification
Yep.
That do you have to go through, and how does that work with doing updates and things like that?
Yeah, so you'll be certified the first time you go through, just like any other update, because subsequent updates basically circumvent the normal kind of packaged app review process. That obviously doesn't work, and so we have a separate process in place where both just through kind of regular reviews of existing apps, as well as, of course, monitoring feedback. So if an app gets a bunch of complaints, for example, then we have a team of folks that will kind of regularly review apps and as they're in flight, so to speak. And so if we get a bunch of complaints, then, of course, we'll take action and pull it down or do whatever.
Okay, so I think we're done with sort of the recorded questions. You can come up here, ask questions, we'll be here. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.